Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network, and this is Terrible Tommy right here in the bunker, right here in north central Indiana, where it's beginning. The wind's coming up pretty good today. It's trying to whip us up another rainstorm, I think. So, anyhow, that's about it from this end. P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana. Resist.com, and if you're not studying up there at the University of Resist.com, you don't know too much, so get at it. So today is the June 17, 2014, Tears Day. And guess what? I got Stray Dog on here. He's been absent for a few weeks, because he's been working real hard. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Terrible Tommy. Tom Terrific. This is, I've been out in the fields, and now it's time to take a day off for the Church of the Latter-day Insurgents.
Yeah, I saw, enjoyed the dance your Fat Tony Governor gave on, that you sent me. That was pretty interesting.
Hey, you get a laugh, you know. You got a laugh at the guy. I think he scored a lot of points with the public with that, because it shows that he's not afraid to go ahead and hang it out there. I mean, whoever his handler is a pretty shrewd guy.
I think he tries a little bit too hard, though. That, I mean, you can carry that a little bit too far. I've seen other politicians do that to the point where it started hurting them, you know?
Yeah, you wouldn't catch Ronnie Reagan doing that, that's for sure.
See, Bill Clinton did a pretty good job of that. He went on, you know, a couple of times and played his saxophone, but he still kept it sort of reserved.
Yeah. That's always a good idea. Let the public know what your skills are in music, and
people like a good laugh. But if you carry it too far, then you start looking like a, you know, dork.
Yeah. How about that? Obongo put 275 troops back in Baghdad, Iraq. Boy.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. Well, that's to protect that $1 billion. Center we built for them over there. It has nothing to do with the Iraqi people. It's that $1 billion building, the green zone over there, that's there to house all the oil people and all that kind of stuff. So, and also, their stooge Maliki's there, and they want to go in there and save his life, and I hope that those insurgents get a hold of that bastard and hang him from the lamppost.
Boy, I'd like to have some insurance policies on them troops going over. They must have made sure they signed their will before they left. I'd imagine if my superior sent me on a mission like that, I wouldn't guess I'd be coming home.
I mean, well, we don't know exactly what's going on. Hell, they could have half the military in there, and we wouldn't know about it, because we don't have a press that really is argumentative and debates issues or anything, hardly at all. They all generally go along with the system, so the system could do pretty much what it wants to do within reason.
Speaking of war, how about this poor child soldier that came home, Bergdahl? Just a child when they sent him over there. He was one of the longest prisoners of war since Vietnam. He made it home. The boy made it home in one piece. All his legs, all his toes. Had parties planned. He was going to see his family. Hasn't seen him in 4 years, his relatives. And he got smeared in the press as a deserter. And he wasn't even, the Army didn't even classify him as that. And it just made me sick. I got physically sick watching how they treated that poor child, that boy that came home.
Well,
I mean, he's a towelhead now, you know, but
maybe that's a lesson. It's got to be a lesson to these young guys, because after a while, you begin to lose sympathy for the troops, because there's enough information on the web and in other sources where there's no excuse for a young man not to know the score and what he's going into. And then if he goes into it thinking that he's impervious to being killed or maimed, well, then what can I do?
It's peer pressure. If the society does not force him into the armed service, then the family often does. And so the child, the young man or woman, feels like they're doing their parents' wishes, carrying on a tradition, when they don't realize that our flag is now called the Jolly Roger.
It's no tradition. This whole nation thing is ridiculous. It never should have been. The older I get, the more I realize this nationhood thing's a joke, that this should have been chopped up in many little different segments, this country. And in fact, in the Articles of Confederation, it was. And we were doing fine under the Articles of Confederation. We beat the British under the Articles of Confederation. We didn't beat the British under a federal system. A lot of people don't seem to realize. Yesterday, I made a point that might step on a lot of toes. I said, they're all worried about the population's too high. We're working on 9 billion people, in the world. So they keep talking about we got to get the population down. Well, how are you going to get the population down? Well, it's not going to be done voluntarily. So I was thinking, sort of being the devil's advocate, I guess, if we send 5,000 troops over there and they get killed or whatever, but they in turn kill hundreds of thousands of non-white Arabs over there, well, aren't we doing nature a favor?
Maybe.
I know that's a little hard to digest, but the logic is, how are you going to get rid of all the excess population? You tell me.
Well, let's compare it to farm life. You've got chicken farm, these giant pens that are outside, half open, half closed. Some of them are miles long. If a fox gets in there and starts killing one side of the chickens and eating them, by the time he's done killing, the other side of the farm will reproduce. So this is a very localized war right now in different parts of the globe. You're not going to see population reduction until we get a global outbreak of war, because let's face it, the muds breed like rats and roaches over in Africa.
Well, I understand that completely. I understand that you can't just with these little regional wars do it. You see Lloyd George of England and the intellectuals of England were sure that mechanized warfare in the First World War would kill off enough to start stabilizing populations. Well, let's look at it this way. Even the Black Plague didn't totally decimate the population. So, obviously, when I'm facetiously saying that they're knocking off hundreds of thousands, that's not going to change the world population situation. However, doesn't it mean that that will probably be the means that the capitalist attempt worldwide, if there's people being killed by the thousands, millions everywhere?
You're absolutely right, but your premise is wrong. It's already being done through subterfuge, and the subterfuge is poisoning of our Mother Earth through dumping of chemicals in the ground, poisoning of the seas. What this does is it removes our habitat for the white race, and we discussed before, cannot be replaced.
Yeah, well, that is another phase of it. Yeah, there's several phases, and that's probably the way they're trying to come about with it. But how are the capitalists going to remain being capitalists if they kill off all their customers?
You're breeding. The ones that are being killed off are for the army, it's the best and brightest. It's the bravest. It's the ones that would take up arms for an ideal, for something that is in your mind and not visible. These type of people are the bravest, and they would have stayed home and reproduced, especially through World War I, World War II. So the white curve, we should have 400 million whites in this country now if there wasn't the Civil War, all these wars that kill the bravest white men.
Yeah.
So they're being replaced. What we're doing, we're seeing now, it's all over the press, that the children are being brought up, not from Mexico, because the Mexicans seem to have a component where they're not as good a worker as the mestizo from further south, from Central America. They seem to be much better workers from our observation here. They work 7 days a week, and they don't drink. the Mexicans drink like fish. So the Department of Homeland Security is importing all these children that will be the replacements for the food industry, for the factories here.
This whole thing is built on Russian roulette, of course, you know. Once you get that more intelligent species out of the way, the ones that will keep establish and go along with civilization and keep things running even on a local scale and just have worker drones that really have nothing to lose, they're total slaves. In the end, don't they always rise up and overrun the boys in power? Remember that movie Escape from New York?
Oh yeah,
what a movie. Where they captured the president. Well, in other words, we've seen this before, to where people were bred down to the point where they had no ability to run anything. They had the ability to do physical labor, but that's about it. Now, you bring up these, I forget the name of that country down there in Central America, where these guys are coming in, they're only about 4 foot tall. You know, those Hondurans and down there, the Mexicans, Mestizo usually has some white blood in him. Not much in most cases, but some. Or they've had a history of European education in Mexico, for a long, long time, and then they had a Napoleonic law there. Whereas farther down in Central America, I think we'd see those as simply slave countries. They were built to be slave countries. In fact, Abraham Lincoln went to the Congress to get, $200,000 or $300,000 at the time, which is a fortune today, to move thousands of blacks down into Central America. Nicaragua, I guess it was. And finally, Nicaragua said, "No, we've changed our mind. You keep your niggers." So it's sort of been a dumping ground for slavery down there in Central America, whether they're black or whether they're indigenous, so-called Indian or what.
Yeah, it seems like the further north you go from South America up through Central America to Mexico, the higher the intelligence is to rip off the white man. Like, the Mexicans know enough how to play the system to rip the white man off. The Puerto Ricans were here first. You know, they came over in the 40s and 50s. They exploit the next echelon of mestizos below them. And it's a tier system where the Hondurans are on the bottom because they're shortest also. But you're right there. You get this class of people that are so short that they can't do the jobs of the Europeans who they're replacing. And you're seeing that. The construction that's being done today, it looks good when it's done, but believe me, 10, 15 years from now, it's all going to crumble. And they know that. The higher-ups know that.
Yeah, the plutocrats, they don't think the way we think. So they're in a class by themselves, these mega-capitalists, and they don't seem to understand that they need the white race to keep their game going. They cannot do without the white race. I mean, the genius of the white race. I mean, not just every white person walking around, because there's plenty of them that aren't worth a shit. But anyhow, the genius and creativity that comes out of the white middle class is what fuels innovation for these people to make all this money, because they simply move in on something that's been created or invented, and they patent it, and then they sit back and collect all the money. Now, you're not going to have that if the white race is gone.
I agree. Well, let's discuss hate. There is no greater hatred on this earth than the Jews have for the whites, and that manifests itself through Christianity.
Well,
Christianity is self-white hating.
That's right. That's right. But I don't agree that all Jews feel that way, because I've known enough of them to know that a lot of them feel like they're under the gun just like everybody else. That the hierarchy of the synagogues and And the big shots like Nitwit Netanyahu and like that are running the show, and they don't have any say. So, I mean, I it's odd for Tom Metzger to come out and defend the Jews, but I think sometimes if we put them all in the same bucket, we're making a mistake.
You have to remember that even a Jew who maybe appeared to be on our side has been put through Talmudic training. The tradition is, especially the males, to send them to, you know, some kind of rabbinical studies, irregardless of whether you're a follower of the Jewish religion or not. I've had several Jews tell me this. Now,
that's only a small percentage, though. I mean, the Orthodox percentage of the Jews is not that large. And then you got the conservative Jews, but the secular Jews, they don't go at all that training and shit. I've known Jews. Wow.
Tom, you're not in the nest of them. Listen, I can, at 50 years, I can tell you the experience. The Talmudic teachings mask itself in several different facilities, one of which can be summer day camp, where the Jews have a special day camps all through the woods that little Jewish children are going to now so their parents can enjoy the summer. During that day camp, along with exercise and fun water activities, they are taught the history of the Jews and that they have a homogenous people. They're teaching racialism through their religion. We know they're not a race, but it's very subtle how the Jew is introduced to it.
Well, wait a minute. Is that any different than all the Christian camps around that teach Judaism or teach the Old Testament? All the Bible camps and all on the radio here, I could turn on any hour, any day of the week and hear preachers preaching right out of the Torah, which is the Old Testament. I mean, what's the difference?
No, that's an excellent response to that. I can't argue that. You're right. Maybe I could argue that the little young Jews take it to heart more than the Christians. See, you know, I grew up Christian and Catholic, but me and my buddies, we knew it was bullshit. That, look, we have to go to Sunday school and church because our parents give this lame excuse. Well, our parents forced us to do it.
Sure.
And that's all they said. They didn't say, look, this is stuff you have to learn. This is stuff. So, you know.
Either that or they just say, get in a goddamn car, we'll kick your ass.
Get in a car. Me and my buddies had to walk in the winter of 77, 78, ice on the street. We didn't have boots. We had sneakers. We had to walk to the church in those days. 10 degrees out.
Well, I could walk to the church too, but it's about 3 or 4 miles. But anyhow, in fact, they built a new church of the sect I was involved with my parents, and it's about half the distance. So I could walk to the church. It's about a mile away. Yeah. You know what pisses me off, and this is a side issue? Of course, my father was, my stepfather was involved with the Church of God Church. And, they started out in this town as in a little storefront someplace back in the 30s, I guess. Well, my father helped the minister build the church, a big, brick, beautiful church they built. And that was there for decades. And then they moved out to outside of town and built another big church. It wasn't near as nice as the one that my father helped build. But they told about the history of it in the paper a few weeks ago, and they left out that church altogether. They didn't even mention it. It was just like they went from the storefront out to this new church, and it pissed me off. My dad worked his ass off on that church.
Yeah, you should let him know. Call him up and tell him to get some truth in reporting.
I'm going to, because, I mean, the church that they tore down to build a damn shopping center was 100 times better church than the one they built. But, I mean, you know, you can go a half mile in any direction and find at least one church, usually two. I mean, this is so churchified, it's unbelievable. But anyhow, back to this Jew thing. But we have to also look at the racial component. I mean, Jews they are a race of whatever race they came into. In other words, you can be a Chinese Jew, you can be a Negro Jew, you can be a Jew from any race. So, What about these assimilated, like, German Jews, the type that you couldn't even tell from anybody else, any other Aryan or white? Now, what are you going to do there if they say, well, hell, I'm not practicing Judaism. I don't never studied the Talmud. I don't want to have anything to do with it. I want to come over and help you guys out. What do we do with that?
I accept them. I do business with them. We have them here. We have German families that were come over in the 1910s, 1920s to do business in New Germany. And you look at them, the brothers and sisters who run the business, I mean, they're German.
Yeah.
But you look at them and you see that little tick. And I know you know what I mean when you, if you've been around Jews long enough. You can see that little tick. They give themselves away. And that's what lends credence to the biological Jew.
Well, it's more the way they act that raises a yellow flag to me. I mean, a guy can come up to me and I couldn't say he was a Jew because he looked like anybody else around here. But usually if he is a Jew in his mind, he's going to tell me within 5 minutes. I've never met a Jew like that didn't say within 5 minutes he was Jewish. And sometimes I've said, well, Why are you bringing that up? I'm not coming up to you and say, hey, hi, I'm an Aryan. Why don't we just talk here and see whether we can come to any conclusion about anything? But most Jews will do that. They will be way out front that I'm a Jew right away.
Aren't those the ones with the grotesque physical deformities like we see in the inbreeding in the in the Jewish areas where they've been inbreeding for years? I think that's true.
But No. I've run into them that look just like any German or English or white Englishman. And there's a lot of Englishmen that look awful Jewish to me. But anyhow, in fact, the monarch, he looks pretty Jewish to me if you're looking for that Semitic look. But anyhow.
The Queen Mum, yeah.
Yeah. So anyhow, but you can look at a lot of Scotchmen. With, you know, these right wingers, you know, anybody that's got a big nose is a Jew. You know, well, look at these Scotsmen up there. A lot of those old guys got great big noses, you know.
That's from drinking. But hey, let's discuss the other subtle nuances of the human form. It's not just appearance, it's your coordination. How do you move your limbs and arms? Your mannerisms. How do you hold your shoulders? How do you hold your head? These subtle differences, the beautiful white mind of the conscious area, of the higher genetic quality whites, can distinguish that, can study the movements of a humanoid creature and develop a baseline pattern where you can compare in your mind against other people you've known and respected, such as teachers and family members, and you can get you can pigeonhole them. You can make a grid in your mind which Aryans move through the earth with grace and form and who speak, who are great speakers. This is what makes you a great radio personality. I know I'm trying to work on my voice. You have to come across with a voice that captures people, and it can be worked on. And this is what we want I would suggest other people who want to volunteer to be a guest, try to work on your voice pattern and have a level consistency. But getting back to the point, these are all things that white people care about and categorize in your mind, and it determines who is and who isn't a Jew, rightfully or wrong.
Well, I think you see that more in Northern Europeans than, say, Southern Europeans. I mean, now, not that they're not people who are like Northern Europeans that live in South Europe. I mean, you know, but the point is that when I was a kid and I'm walking down the street with my mother, she continually said, straighten up, Tom. Keep your back straight. Straighten up. She was always on me, drove me up the wall. And still today, I'm walking down the street and I'm hearing my mother say, straighten up, Tom. Straighten up, Tom. And I do, because as you get older, now I'm 76, you begin to start having an inclination to lean over a little bit. And so I have to continually force myself, no, you're not going to do that.
Oh, yeah. Well,
but, you know, your tall Northern Europeans, more than any other area of Europe, I think, and that includes Germany, of course, tend to walk straight and tall and don't hunch over.
Right, yeah, it's always good to have good posture, but I'll tell you, if you ever had back injury, that'll make you straighten up even worse. Like,
yeah.
But, yeah, it's all part of the Aryan form. Now, I know you talked about before how those silly Arabs, they require all the women be covered in their hands and their wrists. Well, I would argue, on my wife and a lot of women, you could look at their hands, and my wife's hands are so beautiful and soft and feminine. They, that tells a story. I mean, and see, some people, like the Arabs, who are, I guess, a more reactionary race, a more primitive race, even if they are a race, they're a tribe. And what are the Arabs?
They're all mixed, like Muslim. The Muslims are mixed race because they promote, that's one of the main tenets of Islamic religion, is race mixing and multiculturalism, or whatever you want to call it. And so, you can go through the Middle East and find all kinds of white people, and then you find all kinds of Negroid type and all kinds of brown type and the whole bit. So, but anyhow, it's the madness of religion is what causes most of our problems. And they are... we have been able to get a hold of our insanity and control it a little bit here in North America. Not as much as we should have, like taxing the churches and don't give them a free taxation and all that. Keep them out of the government and things like that. But over there, I mean, it's absolutely, totally inundated with insanity. I mean, covering up a woman. I mean, this makes the guy look like a total coward idiot, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, that's true, because from an early age, I guess if you're not exposed to the human form in a nude form, or, seeing female arms and hands like they are, they're even more puritanical than the Christians. That's sure, if they ever see a woman without sleeves on, bare sleeves, their arms exposed, they're going to go wild because of their puritanical Arab religion.
They get it from the Jews. I mean, really, the Jews had it first, and they just took it and perverted it even more.
The hole in the sheet.
Yeah.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah. There's vestiges of all this Islamic stuff among the Jews, but it's not as pronounced.
So
I've seen a lot of Jew women should have a hood over their head.
Maybe that's the only way the rabbi could become aroused, if he covered it. It's like putting a bag over her head. Huh?
Yeah,
that's how ugly those Jewish women are.
But what do you think, old Donald Sterling, this Jew? He's really given him a real fight for this basketball team. He's gone to, I don't know whether you heard the show where I said he went to this nigger church down in South LA. I guess trying to get some sympathy or something. And he did get some sympathy from the blacks. But anyhow, now he's taking on all the teams in the league and showing their hypocrisy. I think it's great because there's, most of them are owned by Jews.
Anytime we can get the racial question in the press, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Because it gets it in their face, and you go, Donald Sterling, fight them.
Yeah.
Anybody with any brains knows that the Jews love the Negro because it's a useful tool. Donald Sterling has used Negroes all his life for gain and money. How could you hate a tool you use for profit?
Well, it was just like the plantations in the South. They didn't hate the Negro. They were making them lots of money, man. And they didn't want to copulate with them or bring them in the house unless they were high yellow or whatever. But But other, if a white group would have come onto the plantation and started killing niggers, that plantation owner would have had all his boys that he could muster out there killing the white boys.
Yep, that's what those.
Or just imagine this: after the Civil War, if Lincoln would have said, "Well, okay, now we got that solved. Let's load these people up and take them back to Africa," and they'd start sending the troops and the wagons and everything around to the plantations to load them up to take them over to the harbor and the coastline and put them on ships. What do you think these guys? They would have fought harder against that than they did in the Civil War, probably, if there's any guys left to fight.
Wasn't Lincoln...
You can't take our niggers. No, those are our niggers, damn it. They're our niggers. You can't have our niggers.
Wasn't Lincoln... I was told, and the research I did was, Abraham Lincoln was killed because his plan was to send all the slaves to Liberia, to Africa.
Lincoln, a politician... Like Hitler or anybody else, they talk a lot out of both sides of their mouth. It depended on who Lincoln was talking to. If you'll read all, I mean, there's been hundreds of books about Lincoln, and you can find him saying about anything you want. You know, that was a sort of a limp-wristed idea, you know, because the capitalists of the North and what was left of the capitalists of the South, they didn't want them shipped out of the country. They knew that they could just move them from chattel slavery into wage slavery, which they did, and they needed them for the cheap labor to break the Union for World War I and World War II that they already had on the boards was coming. And so they knew they'd need those niggers for cheap labor.
So that's what Johnny Reb fought for, was for the antebellum system of slaves taking white men.
The same thing white men fight always for is the upper class, the ruling class, the capitalists, and so forth, and they convince them to go marching off to war and get their ass blown off. And it's never changed. I mean, you name me a war where it wasn't what happened. I mean, go back to Europe and look at the religious wars, and of course they used religion as a front too to just rob other people, the whole bit. Look at the Crusades. Thousands and thousands of white people killed marching down there to free the Holy Land while the Knights Templar is making a deal with the Arabs and all that kind of stuff. So it never ends. This struggle never ends. And the only way it'll end is if white people just say, "We're not fighting your goddamn wars. If anything, we're going to fight you."
What about this war going on in the ghetto where I live in Niggerville? You got every black arrested has a handgun on them and 10,000 decks of heroin. They found that NFL star out of, I think it's Houston or California or somewhere. He had 500,000 doses of heroin in his house. Why isn't Homeland Security in these ghetto cities going after the blacks and going after the heroin dealers? You know why? Because they're bringing the heroin blacks to sell.
Here again, you're going along with the system here. And if we're not, if we're going to be against the system, we got to use a different logic. Like, I don't give a shit how much drugs the blacks have in their community. I don't care how many thousand vials of this and that. I don't care how many blacks are armed to the teeth, because they're armed to the teeth mostly against each other. It's only when they come out and start killing white people, and then sometimes some of these white people are so bad they probably deserve to be killed, you know. But the point is that anything that's a problem or can be develop into a problem for the system, I'm supporting.
Right. Never do what your enemy expects you to do.
That's right. You know, I was thinking about, you know, this is a little off the subject, but I was thinking about the Order Bruderschweigen. And what a great idea they had on the boards in the beginning. But how they allowed themselves to get personal instead of keeping their mind on tactics and the prize. And I was thinking, you know, because these insurgents over there, ISS, sissies or whatever, they went through and first thing, they sent contingencies into the banks and everywhere and got all the gold bullion and everything. Now they've accumulated over a billion dollars in cash and gold in their occupation as they fought, you know, and that's of course what every revolutionary struggle should do, and which makes them the richest insurgency that's ever existed right now. And so I was thinking, now you see the plan of the order, and you can read it in the books. They were going to take the main vault in San Francisco, which there was a book written about it 20 years before. But anyhow, they had a guy on the inside, and they were all set to do that. But what did they do? They got off on a personal thing with this Alan Berg in Denver, who didn't mean shit. He just a goddamn little kike Jew that yap, 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 yap. I would have laughed at him. I'd have been on his show and he screamed at me, and I'd have screamed and yelled back. I'd have had fun, you know. But they got off on this tangent, and that's what led to their downfall, instead of pursuing the tactic of what would have, if they would have pulled it off, or even if they had not pulled it off, the books now would be written entirely different. Hey, these guys were serious. They were going for the main vault in San Francisco, where all the gold and stuff is at. Now, you can't say these guys are idiots. You can't say they weren't brave. But when they took that side road and went after Alan Berg, it destroyed everything.
So, yeah, and that was just because Alan Berg was bad-mouthing
David Lane
on the radio.
Well, it more was a thing about David Lane. David Lane was always calling in and arguing with him and debating with him, and it was so, you know, that's fine. Call in and debate. I have no problem debating. I like to debate people, but I'm not going to take the tactics of something that had major possibilities and waste it on going after one little crummy little kike that, you know, I knew people in Denver at the time told me, they said, "Tom, almost the whole city of Denver hated that little Jew."
Yeah.
They're trying to have a little problem figured out which person got him that hated him, you know. But they found the, the MP3 casings or something that came from the automatic machine gun. But anyhow, the point was, you got to keep your eye on the ball no matter what it is.
Don't let people make you mad for no, you know. Don't lose your cool.
Just laugh at them, you know. There's nothing drives the Jews or anybody else crazy that hates your guts. I do it all the time. I write to the newspaper and I say funny things and somebody attacks me and then I say something funny back and they don't know how to handle that, you know.
Well, you know why? Because it's unexpected. They expect you to return their vitriol with more vinegar.
Yeah.
And when you see, this is the beauty of your recommendation. Do what the enemy least expects. When you're confronted, now, this is hard, though. It's hard for me. When I see an enemy on the street, I want to grimace up and show my teeth like a wolf does when he sees another wolf, you know?
Yeah.
But the right thing to do, like, say, smile at him, because they're like, "Oh, wow, what's that? That's a..." It's just what the Asians always do, what you told us. Anytime you see an Asian, they're always smiling.
Oh, yeah.
Smiling,
yeah.
Smiling. Oh, you're smiling, your friend. Yeah,
he's got his hand in your pocket. He's smiling. But the point is, you look at him like this. You're helping us bring down the system because you're such a low-life half-breed or whatever you are. Your people are bringing this system down, and the only time we're going to have a chance to do anything about it is when you bring it all the way down. So, right on, brother. My whole attitude over the years has changed. I'm not going to step out in front of a train and try to stop it. I'm going to put grease on the tracks. I want it to go, baby.
Sure. You also moved out of the high crime area, though. You moved to a better town, too, so that's...
Yeah, well, in some ways, that's not so good, because sometimes it's good to see your opposition in mass all the time. But the trouble was, I was getting to the point where I could probably have been pushed over the edge without a lot of trouble. You know how sometimes you get. So I think it was I think it was a tactical move to get out of there before I ended up in prison.
Hey, it's a quality of life issue. You don't want to smell those damn beaners and the way they smell and unwashed, and it's horrible.
Well, the other thing, though, is that you get used to them, though. That is a problem. Like you got Jose, he's a good mechanic, and he works cheap, and he smiles and laughs and drinks a beer. And you get to where you, there's certain of these people you like, and pretty soon one thing leads to another, you know.
I imagine over decades, maybe, but...
Well, I had a neighbor one time before I really got in racial, and he was a, what was he? Yeah, he was a Mexican, yeah. Lived out about a block away from me. And so I knew him because we, evidently, we'd been in Amway, selling Amway products. And he, but he was always trying to get me to go with him with these Mexican women. And that was his... He tried that over and over again. I says, no, no, not me. So that's the way it starts. I mean, just little casual acquaintances. All of a sudden, you're screwed up and you're gone and your wife leaves you and the whole bit, you know.
Oh, sure.
Just over a little putang.
Hey, one other thing I wanted to discuss was, I know your opinion on the sentencing guidelines for crack cocaine versus powder cocaine. I come down on the side in favor of a harsher sentence for crack cocaine for this reason. The user who takes crack cocaine, it is usually a life-changing event for the user where, because the drug is prepared in a way that is absorbed into the body in a matter of seconds, produces an effect that cripples the individual for life. Where powdered cocaine is more slowly absorbed by the system, it is expelled in a matter of days, and usually the user can go on with their life and not feel the same effects. But that's the difference. That's why lawmakers chose to punish crack cocaine more than powder cocaine, because in the ghettos, I mean, it's worse than heroin. And I know you had come down on the side that, well, a drug is, or it's the same drug, the guideline should be the same, so I just wanted to give you that input.
Well, both sides show weakness of character and weakness of mentality, so why not let them breathe themselves out of action? I mean, why not take a more hard-hearted view of it? Screw you. If you want to take cocaine, you want to take this stuff, take it and get out of our way. You know, you're breathing our air, you know?
Yeah, but see, the blacks and mestizos are selling it to the white children. And these are white children without guidance, the same type that would put on the uniform and go fight for money.
Well, yeah, but when the white parents and the white community doesn't rise up like they used to in the old days and knock these people off, what are you going to do? What are you going to say? If the whites are so weak that they won't stomp it out, and forget the goddamn cops. Stomp it out, burn them out, shoot them out, or whatever. Well, if they won't do that, what are you going to do? They're going to pray for them? They're going to pray for these guys that are giving their kids drugs? I mean, you know, we got to get the race back to the point where we will not stand for this. It's not going to happen. And if you do it, you're dead.
It'll return to that. It has in certain parts. Well, let's face it, drug rehab and all that psychology, drug counseling is big money. And like we've discussed before, there's a cure for cancer. They won't let it out. There's a cure for most diseases. The doctors aren't telling you the real deal when you go in for treatment, when you go in for different ailments. They only give you half the story. And it's a big business, and they're not going to give up their money.
Well, the secret is stay out of hospitals and stay out of doctor's offices if you can. I mean, once in a while I get a checkup, but I try to eat. I've been eating more and more raw vegetables and stuff like that, and discouraging eating a lot of cooked stuff and the whole bit. And it's obvious that you can fix your health up or help your health by living that way. But you can't push that on people because they're just not going to listen. Or, I mean, they listen, but they're not going to do it. You know?
Well, therein lies the government's responsibility to gently guide the populace, like we've argued about Michelle Obama. She's trying to reform the school lunch program. Now, this is a good thing. You take the sugar out. Oh, she's this, she's that. idiots, you know?
Well, yeah. Yeah, because, look, the sugar industry makes the most money off of this crap they're feeding us. It's the sugar, and people should get this book, Sugar Blues, and read it about how sugar has been the drug for a long time. They don't talk about sugar as a drug, but sugar is a drug. Great armies have fallen because they've started using sugar in their diet back in the old days. And see, everything we eat has got sugar in it, and the sugar industry has a lock on the politicians and like that. And so, of course, they don't want you to feed kids healthy food in the cafeteria. And of course, the kids, they said, well, they're throwing away the food. Well, they're so acclimated to the sugar that they have to get off of it like a drug. And so anyhow, but this, you know, what pisses me off is these Republicans that when Obama does something good or Michelle does something good, they're still a nigger. I mean, you know, and they are, but still, they use these things as an excuse because all the Republicans want to do is get him out of there and get their guy in, you know.
Sure.
Well, they don't care. They're not, as long as they can live in their big houses and travel around the world and stay in the big hotels, they don't care how many niggers are around. As long as they got an army of security around them to protect them and everything, none of these white politicians give a shit about the working white man.
Well, consider this. There's a tax on liquor and cigarettes because it's bad, like a scent tax. But there's no tax on sugar when they could tax it.
Of course. And that's telling. That's the big gorilla in the room. Nobody talks about sugar. I mean, except the health conscious people, and who's going to listen to them? Oh, they're a bunch of, you know, and this and that. So, but I have bought several copies of that that book, Sugar Blues, and given it to people. And because once you read that book, you'll want to stay away from sugar as much as possible. And it's almost it's impossible, I think, to eat nowadays without getting some sugar.
I think if we get our people off of the soft drinks, which my wife never drank them, and she got me off.
Yeah.
From about 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Tremendous gain in health, tremendous outlook, less tooth rot, everything. If we could just do that one thing, advise people, stay away from the soda. You want to have sugar, little syrup on your pancakes or something once in a while, that's fine. We're just saying don't, our white people, please, and children, don't drink soda every day.
Well, it's hard for them to get anybody that's reasonably thin in the military anymore. They're having a hell of a time with these fat asses that won't pass. They can't do anything in the military. And when I walk around this town I live in and go to a shopping center, and I'm always looking at people around me, and I'm saying, look at these fat asses. I mean, obese, morbidly obese. If we were ever invaded, there would be almost no resistance. These people couldn't fight anything. They're so goddamn fat they couldn't force march a mile.
My grandma always used to mention that to me. She lived to be 102 years old. She'd say, Pat, look at the ass on that one.
Yeah.
How does the ass get that big? The look on her face was like, she just couldn't understand it. Like, she was born in 1905, never seen an ass that big.
We used to have peer pressure. There is no peer pressure about anything anymore except being a racist. If you're a white racist and love your race and want to fight for your race, boy, they got plenty of peer pressure on that.
Yeah, I give it right back to them. Hey, but, you know, instead of the Washington Redskins, I sent a message to the owner. The Washington Blackskins, the football team.
Well, maybe, you know? what would happen if they changed it to the Washington Whiteskins?
No. there's no whites in football.
Well, yeah, but if they just change the name, what the hell? I mean, you know. Anyhow, I love to see this professional nigger ball stuff tearing itself to pieces. I mean, every sports channel now are talking race. And you go on the web and on racism, and it's all through football. Hell, it's the racism at the World Cup, racism here, racism there. They have they have created the Frankenstein media monster, and now they're stuck with it. They're not less racism around. There's far more racism. It's worked its way. It works its way out in many ways. I mean, you know, people, and so they do it more cleverly, but they're just as racist.
It's beautiful. Sports has become the vehicle for racial discussion and progress, just like in a court of law. When one side asks the question and opens the bag, the other side then can inject information.
That's right.
And this is why it's good. Anytime.
Hello?
John Rocker, if you remember, back in the early 90s, a pitcher for the Atlanta Braves.
Oh, yeah.
Got in trouble for making a comment. Oh, boy, this is starting to look like the H train in New York. And he was absolutely right, and I supported him at the time. I came out and said, well, yeah, that's right. You know, you want to piss him off, go to a ball game and wear a John Rocker T-shirt, you know, and that lets everybody know, racist.
Well, we all supported that. The problem was that most of these guys that do that end up a week later apologizing all over the place and groveling at the feet of everybody, you know. If guys would stand up and say, I'm going to bite the bullet and just do it, and stick with it and say, you know, like Ty Cobb. Ty Cobb's a perfect example. He was a white racist, and he would never go against his idea of white racism. And he let everybody know it, too. And he was one of the greatest baseball players who ever lived.
Yep. Hey, the Jewish press in my town, they're putting out stuff to counter this anti-immigrant thing. Here's a headline from the Trenton Times study. Area growth in tech sector stymied by availability of foreign workers. And in the article, I'll reduce it for you, they lament the fact that New Germany cannot import more foreign-born technical workers to work in the tech industry. And I argue, they get these foreign workers with degrees from Calcutta University, which is a joke anyway. Well, you know what? Years ago...
Hello?
Know how it was. I knew white men from the city I grew up with. They got jobs in the tech sector, not by a degree that they had, but they used time accumulated in the position, and that substituted for your degree. In other words, they evaluated you on your knowledge rather on what paperwork you had.
One thing I want to add to this, interject before I forget it, is that these companies, these corporations are building schools in Pakistan and India and all over the place to educate and train these people. And I warned white people a long time ago, just because you're white does not mean you're necessarily going to end up on top, because there are many, many non-whites who are very clever, and they can, and if they go full bore for education and you act like some people do in certain areas in the South and so forth, and you don't become educated, then you're no better. You're less than a black or an Indian or a Paki, because a lot of those Pakis and Indians are smart as hell, man. I mean,
absolutely.
We shouldn't take it away from them? But that's the problem. It's not the dumbasses that we worry about. It's the sharpie that wants to say, well, we got to have these people because they're smarter than hell. No, those are the ones we don't want in here. We got to furnish and breed our own smart guys. But anyhow, they're coming in here to work for these plants, and they've already been through 2 or 3 years of college in a school paid totally for by the corporations.
If we fast forward it in time and went to the year 2114, we would see the Earth to have two species of man. Asian man and white man. The Negro man will be completely gone from this planet in 1,000 years. That's my prediction.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. It's, I sort of doubt it, but they may be limited, but...
And that speaks to the ingenuity of the Asian man. You're right. Asian man is a formidable foe for whites because their ability, their workmanlike ability, which is just diametrically opposite to the Negro work ethic, yeah, in the future, Asians, they're our biggest threat.
Well, this is why we should hate with a perfect hatred the leaders of the corporations and the banking systems that have exported our technology, given away all our secrets. No matter what we come up with, we give it to the Asians. And then, and then we cuss the Asians. Well, hell, the Asians are just doing what's natural. Somebody's so stupid as to give them the keys to the city, they're going to take them. And we got to quit blaming all these other people and go after the sons of bitches at the top, which is only about 1 or 2, 3% of the people. I don't give a shit what color they are, but most of them are white. And most of them are not even Jewish. There's a whole lot of Jews up there, but not compared to the white rats, white Christians at the top. We got to take it to them, or it'll never change. It'll never change if we don't.
That's exactly right. And what's the first step in taking it to the enemy is not doing business with them. I know it might sound like a pittance as an individual that you withhold your purse strings and watch your purchases, only buy from whites, don't do businesses with non-white. But it has to start there. And then if you want to take it further, hey, you're on your own. You know there's plenty of things you can do to throw wrenches in the works. Those people employed in industry with these big companies that are ripping the what?
Yeah. You faded out there.
Lights off. Do whatever you can to sabotage when you're inside and slow them down. Subterfuge, but don't reveal yourself.
Well, that's why I like, I support the ragheads overrunning the factories and so forth, the corporations have built, overrunning these goddamn things and burning them down. The more revolutionary groups in other third world countries rise up and attack the corporate, United States corporate interests, the less interest we'll have overseas, and run their ass out of town. Hang them, burn them, whatever has to be done. So I support these insurgents in other countries that are saying, kill the Yankee. Well, they're not killing my kind of Yankee. They're killing the asshole capitalist. Hello? Whoa, we had a problem here.
I support them totally. It was such a good week, this last week, to see Iraq and the indigenous people of the area taking back their country that was illegally taken away in an aggressive act of war, a sovereign nation invaded, as it's been time and time again. And all this happened because of the dissolution of the Soviet Union in 1989. The big bully on the block didn't have anybody to counter him. Big Uncle Sam, nobody to counter him. Then the Gulf War won, January 1991. That was the beginning.
Well, if you go back on my radio shows all the way back there long before the Iraq War, you'll hear me saying that if they go in there and get mired down in the Middle East, they're going to get their ass beat. We're going to come out of there with our ass beat. And when they attacked Iraq, I said the same thing. We don't learn, or this, I learn, but you learn, but most people don't learn, that the indigenous people in an area are going to fight to the death forever for their land. I mean, the Vietnamese did it. They fought the French. They fought the Japs. They fought the United States. They fought China. They fought everybody. But they're there. And that's why it never works. Of course, the capitalists, they just say, well, it may not work, but it'll work long enough for us to rob everybody, and then we'll get out of town. Well, and then leave the population of taxpayers.
The capitalists don't understand nature. It's habitat.
Well, they know that
white men can't live in the desert.
Well, they know that they can leave us holding the bag. You see, the taxpayer holds the bag. The capitalist screws up all these countries and tears them up, bombs them, and everything else, robs them, and everything else, and gets out of town. But he knows that they just go to the government, their partner, and he'll rob all the people of their tax money, you see. So it works for him. So the only way we can change is change the whole operating system into some kind of an Aryan socialism or something, because capitalism cannot be tolerated too much longer. It's eating us alive.
not on a large scale. Small scale capitalism is fine. Entrepreneurship. Providing a service to your locals.
That's not capitalism. That's free. Free enterprise. Don't ever get them mixed up. That's one of our big problems today. They tell an entrepreneur he's a capitalist. He's no capitalist.
Capitalist, by definition, is the conglomeration of all money, I guess, right? That would be the definition.
To centralize all capital, eliminate all competition till only a few people have all the capital, and the other people have no capital.
That scares the shit out of me.
Well, they've done it. They've accomplished that. You know, 3% of the world's population hold, 85% of the wealth? I mean, and the rest of the world, even our people here in this country are scraping around. They can't even get a job or anything. You know? But when anybody says you're a capitalist, no, you're a free enterpriser. You believe in lots of little outfits competing against each other, but not trying to kill each other, and everybody making a little piece of the pie, but not saying I got to have the whole goddamn pie. I mean, you know.
So capitalism is predatory by nature.
Right.
I've heard that statement before.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And even no matter what they say about Karl Marx, he understood that. His idea of a replacement was a problem, too. But still, if there had not been runaway capitalism, there never would have been a Karl Marx, you know. Unfortunately, Marxism replaced good Aryan socialism. Aryan socialism was really coming on strong, and of course, in Germany, they wanted to get it going, and it started to go until Hitler diverted things over to the capitalists and the industrialists and betrayed the National Socialist Revolution.
Our friends Otto and Gregor Strasser.
Yeah.
Brilliant, brilliant men. Beautiful, brilliant men.
I go up to Hulu, watch a lot of movies. There's a lot of movies about Germany and after the war and leading up to the war and stuff like that that people never heard of. And boy, I'll tell you, it's so sad that it shows the streets of Germany and in the 30s and everything is beautiful and wonderful people and everything, and how Hitler drug them into this horrible war and how the British drug their people into it and French and everybody else and ended up with nothing but embers and destroyed buildings. I mean, we can't do this. The white race cannot continue like this. We cannot let ourselves be cajoled or forced or any way into this. Anybody tries to get us to go out there in other countries and kill other people, we need to kill them. The enemy is among us. We don't have to go any place in the world to find our enemy.
Why doesn't you, Hollywood, make a movie about the Strasser brothers?
Well, are you kidding? Are you kidding? Hollywood's a capitalist outfit. I mean, they're making... Why do you think that after every weekend they come up with how much money a movie made? Not how great the acting was. Not how great the actors were, anything, how much money the movie made, because they're spending millions and millions of dollars making these movies, which is all borrowed capital from the big banks and so forth. And so they're not gonna make any, even saying anything good about Hitler, you know, or condemning Stalin, because Stalin,
So that's how the machine works. It's new movies are an investment.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, you can go right up there to Wall Street any day of the week, and there are people standing around on the corner trying to get movies promoted, and you can buy stock from them almost right on the street. Because movies are sort of a... It's a gambling situation, but you can make it big or you can lose your ass. So, no, it's a total capitalist thing. They may throw some communist or socialist stuff in there once in a while, but it's mainly capitalist.
I always wondered why the local news would report how...
Whoops, you cut out.
...much a movie made the weekend. Like, I'm thinking to myself, like, I don't give an F how much that made.
Hell
but
no.
But they're reporting to their investors. Yeah.
Well, of course, everything is corporate controlled now. All the press, the government, everything. We are living in, I have to agree with the progressives, this is a fascist state. I mean real fascist, not halfway fascist like Italy. This is fascism all the way, man. And they control everything. The corporations, and now they, well, look, when you get the Supreme Court to say a corporation has all the rights of an individual, it's gone. I mean, that's the end. And money has the rights, and you don't have a right, and you don't have any privileges at all. Jesus Christ, if that won't cause people to revolt, I don't know what will.
Tommy, it's global fascism as opposed to national fascism.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Well, I think that's about it for today. We've pretty much put it out there. I hope we've offended a few more people, and they'll get on here and give us trouble and argue with us. But I don't know. They're pretty quiet.
Thanks for having me, TT. Let's hope more soldiers make it home in one piece.
Yeah, and don't go anymore, because I'm not going to support people going over there if they're so stupid. I mean, then they come back all chopped up and beat up and everything, and then they get on TV with these ads that I'm supposed to cry and moan and send them money. That's sick as far as I'm concerned. I don't want any of them to go over there. Occupy no other country.
Our child soldiers, Tommy. Child soldiers, shed a tear for them. Oh, boy, I feel bad for them.
Okay.
Don't go. Don't go.
We'll talk to you again.
Good to be with you. Take care, guys. What we see at the end is...
Shut up.
Later. 14-5.